The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Engage with Andy Bush. In order to stay ahead in business, you need to be on the pulse of the business world, current news, and politics. We'll provide the thought-provoking topics and show you where we have been, what's next, and what it means for you at home. Life's complicated. Let Andy help you figure it out. Now, here is your host, Andy Bush.
Welcome to Engage. I'm your host, Andy Bush. Today, we're honored to have on New York Times bestselling author, not once, but four times bestselling author, Amity Shlales. I'm going to mispronounce that forever now that she corrected me before we started this interview, but what the heck. Amity's seminal work on the political economy is The Forgotten Man, A New History of the Great Depression. It is a phenomenal book, but what's so cool about this, it's got a new illustrated or graphic novel version of the book, and that was just recently released. You've got to get this for the beach reading. It's so much fun. I'm almost done with it. It's great. She has also written Coolidge, a full-length biography of the 13th President of the United States. She is one of the greatest voices in support of the free market and joins us today. Amity, welcome to Engage.
Thank you.
Okay, and you are also chair of the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation. What is that, and what do you do for it?
The Coolidge Presidential Foundation wants to share Coolidge with Americans, particularly young Americans. We have a debate camp for kids who want to get to know Coolidge and to practice debate every summer, and I'm just coming off the high of that camp. We had over 100 kids at and we had 31 homeschoolers, in fact, two, at the Coolidge camp, and they learned about Coolidge, and they met the Coolidge impersonator, they learned the Coolidge's greatest speech, which is called Have Faith in Massachusetts, and it just gave them a different kind of president to take away with them.
Well,
that was wonderful. He is a different president too.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm gonna flip my script. I was gonna talk about Forgotten Man, but let's talk about the Forgotten President, Calvin Coolidge, since we brought it up. What made him so compelling that you had to write a book about him?
Well, you know, nowadays when we say we cut the budget, that means we cut the rate of increase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a politician will get up there and say, we cut the budget. That is, we kept it lower than it was before relative to inflation and the population. That's the way to do it, right? So they will hedge, and by the end you're dizzy, you know. Whereas Coolidge actually just cut the budget. That is to say, the lower number came in the later years, real, nominal, with toast and butter. He actually cut the budget. So how did he do that? Because the population was growing in his day in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. It was a long period. He was president, 67 months.
Right.
You know, how did he do that? That's kind of curious, especially in peacetime. You'll find all kinds of presidents cutting the budget following a war. But he did it smack in the middle of peacetime. He came into office, this was the 30th president, so he came in 1923 when a president died. Coolidge was vice president. He became president in the summer of 23, right around now, and then he stayed until the end of February 1929.
Well, I think what's interesting, there's a couple of interesting things going on here. First of all, for the listeners out there, why do we want to focus on him? It's because there was extraordinary growth at the time of his presidency, right? That's the key thing. And I think that's part of the point that you're trying to make here by focusing on Coolidge is that, hey, he actually reduced government spending and the payoff was this extraordinary growth.
That's right. I mean, even now, there's a ferocious debate, a white-hot debate, and you know, Mr. Bush is trying to help me out to make sure I'm not just saying austerity, because austerity in Republican language is supposed to be negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be for austerity. Maybe Barry Goldwater was for austerity and never wins elections, so let's not talk about austerity, okay? That's like the scarlet letter. And what the Coolidge period shows is that you can have stiff austerity and fantastic growth without inflation, by the way.
Yeah.
And right now, so whoa, how did they do that? I mean, many of your listeners will have heard of the decade when we had both inflation and unemployment. In the 20s, they had neither speak of.
That's astonishing.
Whoa, right?
Yeah,
so,
that's wonderful.
So who are those people and how they do that? but there is a cultural, you know, the GOP really doesn't love Coolidge considering how great he was because they're afraid of seeming like they're for austere. They don't want to seem like Scrooge, right? Well, Scrooge begat plenty. So you helped me out by mentioning that. But I am not afraid to say I'm for austerity and not even mention growth. I'm not afraid to do that because austerity, when it's government austerity, is good.
And I was going to say, and the thing is what most people don't understand, when you're looking at the financial markets as well, the best thing that you can possibly have for stock markets going up is tight fiscal policy and loose monetary policy. Not that it's great all the time, but that really, it gets out the inefficiencies, obviously, having reduced government spending, and it allows the animal spirits out to run. I want to get back to a little bit.
But I wanted to say Coolidge would disagree with you, so I'm going to pretend.
Okay.
Coolidge. You do not need loose monetary policy to have prices go up when there are productivity gains in equities. Now, was there loose monetary policy in the later 20s? Probably, partly because the stocks went up like crazy. They went up from 100 to 381, and that made Coolidge awfully nervous. He was a cautious guy. And was some of that inflation? Well, there's a debate about that. But I think Coolidge would say it should be tighter. And it was, by the way, tighter than what we have now. What was the interest rate in the famous loose 1920s? Well, it might be 3 or 4.
Right.
Higher than that sometimes. It wasn't exactly 0 or 1.
Right. Well, that's an awesome, you know, impersonation of Coolidge, by the way. I just want to point that out.
Oh, thank you. For a Chicagoan, I do my best, you know.
One of the things that's interesting, too, about his time in the presidency was that there was a lot of discussion about actually cutting, you know, entitlements. I guess in their time, there was a lot of pressure to spend, you know, a lot of additional money from the budget to help veterans, and there were other things going on. Maybe you could kind of explain that, because I think that's so important, because we're having that same debate right now, clearly, after we just got this dire report from the Social Security Trust Fund trustees talking about, for instance, Social Security disability insurance running out of money in 2016. So there's going to be tremendous pressure on the next president to increase spending, and I think that's one of the cool things that I took away from the book.
Yeah, no, I mean, we think of the 20s, I mean, many, many times, and I hope that you do share Coolidge with your children. Many, many times I'm told at the end of the speech, well, Amity, it's not like then now. We're used to entitlements, and they didn't have any progressives then. But the contrary was the fact. At the time, the progressive movement was on the rise. And remember, people favor whatever's growing, right? They get excited by it. Oh, yeah, well, the old past is dead, and now here come the progressives. They are the future. And there was a consensus that they would be the future. And you know that in 1924, Coolidge did have to run for election. He had come into the office through a sad death, but he had to run on his own in 24. The progressives took 17% of the vote. The progressives were wild. They wanted to nationalize utilities. They kind of thought we should nationalize the railroads, not just in wartime as they had done, but also in peacetime. The railroads, that would be like sort of nationalizing trucking now.
It's crazy.
Because the railroads were the trucks. They're, you know, they wanted, you name it, they wanted it. But especially utilities, which was then the sort of internet. That would be the equivalent of nationalizing the internet. And everyone thought, well, they might have a shot. And many in his own party were progressives. In addition, farmers were suffering. Equities went back up, but farm prices didn't go back up as much, right?
Mm-hmm.
So farm prices were down often. There were foreclosures all over the place. The Depression of the 1930s had a little preview in the farming sector in the 1920s. So, and there were many more people on the land at that time. Today, farmers have money, but not a lot of votes. In those days, they would be, you know, many, many people, a large share of the electorate on the farm in some way or close to the farm with a parent on the farm. So two, and then I forgot to mention the vets again, they had more vets than we have now because they had universal conscription in World War One, more recent vets, and there weren't any antibiotics. A lot of these fellows were disabled, right? And they faced
Their wives didn't work either.
Their wives didn't work, and they faced a life of chronic pain. Great, right? So they wanted to kind of little social security. They were demanding that. So it took a lot of guts to say no to farmers and vets, two very lovable groups. It took a lot of guts to say no to the movement within your own party that everyone, the AEIs and Brookings of the day, the television commentators of the day, said was the future.
Right.
The progressives, yet Coolidge did that. He vetoed 50 times, and he was especially good at the pocket veto, which is that veto when you kill something by inaction over the recess, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like not just good at the pocket veto. He was a regular Isaac Stern of the pocket veto. He would lure Congress into passing something by saying vaguely favorable things about the project, and then wham, he would kill it. Right in the holiday, so in the recess, and you have to kind of admire that, how he did that. You know, there's a bit of guile in politics, of course.
No, really? Oh, that's
really,
excellent.
Right?
Well, you know, I had on Elaine Joerner from the Ayn Rand Institute, and he argued that the U.S. has its priorities backwards in the Middle East. So I'm shifting gears a little bit here on you. But this would also go against Coolidge's do-no-harm ideas on foreign policy. Just in the minute we have before the break, maybe you could give us, an idea of how he would view this today.
Coolidge believed the U.S. was a model and that we should look to ourselves first and fix ourselves before we go rambling everywhere. And, a foreign leader would send him a gold shield. That's what Ethiopia sent him. And what did Coolidge send? A couple law books. That's what he sent back. So Coolidge, he was not a neocon. And that makes him interesting, too.
Mm.
Now, so I just think bring your kids up to Plymouth Notch, Vermont, where he was born, to our little miniature Williamsburg, and show them and sign up for our summer camp. We're going to have a number of events for Coolidge's and any scholar of Coolidge or family interested in Coolidge next summer, 2015. But there's still time this summer to come, including to a naturalization we're having on August 11. Coolidge was not anti-immigrant, but he did believe in controlling immigration.
That's interesting. Obviously, these are points in policies that are still at the forefront of what's going on in the American psyche right now. All right, let's take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about how you take a novel and make it into a graphic novel. This is Engage. I'm Andy Bush.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.